Accession number 31448, Mr. Roy Jones, Reel 11. Now, what about the hammock? So, was it your first time you'd ever been in a hammock? Or
yeah.
Tell us about hammocks, because there's a lot of people who talk about them. What do you think of
them? Well, can I tell you one thing before, talking about hammocks and sleeping? Well, while we were stored in ship, there was a big pile of camp beds. And they weren't camp beds as you know them now. These were made out of very thin steel that folded up to next to nothing. A canvas sheet that had just strips of metal running through the edge each side. And they could pull out and it used to fold in half. So it folded from, say, 6 foot to 3 foot. And the four legs were loose. They just went in little eyelets on the steel bars. So it folded up to next to nothing. And I said to one of my mates, I'm having one of these. I think they were meant for the officers. But I said, I'm having one of these. So I had one, and a couple of other lads had one. And we used to wrap them in the hammock. So, and there was a reason for that later on. But the hammocks, when people get a hammock, you see a hammock slung up, you think, how the hell did he sleep in that? But what you make yourself is hammock stretchers, and that's a piece of wood that's probably, 2 foot, somewhat of that length, decent wood, with a V-cut in either end, and you put that in the hammock nettles. Now, the hammock nettles are the little bits of rope at the end of the hammock that butt into one with a ring on the end, so they're all tied there in the ring. Then you've got your rope from that ring, a long rope to sling round the hammock bars.
How did you find it when you first got into it? Because some people have difficulty getting in, don't
they? Yeah, you have difficulty getting in if you haven't got the hammock stretchers. You don't have any difficulty getting in when you've got the hammock stretchers because the hammock's open like that. If you've got no hammock stretchers, the hammock will just hang there limp like a limp sausage. And you trying to get in it, then it's difficult. You can't. Well, you can, but it's a bit of a job. So if you've got the hammock stretchers, your hammock is opened to at least 2 foot. So you can drop in. And the most comfortable things to sleep in. And, of course, you're only young then. So, I mean, it probably wouldn't be comfortable for me now or anybody, you know. But I found them quite comfortable. And, of course, in the winter, you slept below decks. In the summer, we used to sleep on the upper deck, when we weren't
in the war zone. And what about stowing them away?
Stowing them away, they had to be lashed Nelson's way, didn't they? 7 lashings for Nelson's 7 victories. And I don't know what his 7 victories are now, but I think it's his 7 victories, I'm not sure. I think it is. I think that's the number creased in the Matlow's trousers, isn't it? You know, they creased them across that way, and that's one crease is for victories, and that's what it's all about. But it's very great pains with your hammock, because they used to inspect them when they came captain's rounds of a night. They all had to be stowed properly, although didn't stop you could go of a morning rather, when captain's rounds used to be at night, but you could turn in if you wanted to turn in, because captain's rounds wasn't till 8 o'clock. If you were watch keeping, then you wanted to get your head down anyway. But during the day, for 8 o'clock or inspection by Cap Marines or something like that, all your hammocks had to be stored away neatly, and they all had to be tied the same way and all be stood up really neat, and your hammocks had to be washed, you know.
Now, what about these folding beds you'd nicked?
Oh, they were...
Where'd you put them?
You can always find a place to stow things. You always find a place somewhere. Because they folded up to about... ...4 inches in circumference. 3 foot long. So you could stow them anywhere. But I think everybody knew, because they must have known, because... When we weren't in Korean waters, if on our set way back, say, down to Singapore or wherever, I used to sleep on the upper deck.
On your folding bed?
On the bed, yeah.
Okay, we'll come back. So now, how did you settle into the ship's routine?
Very good, actually. We had a part to watch, a part of ship to clean.
Now, what was yours?
And the Royal Marines always looked after the after flats. That's where the officers were. All the flats aft, and of course on board ship you supplied lifebuoy sentry, and he was always based on the quarter deck at sea. Cell sentry, if anybody was in cells, then you provided a cell sentry. Keyboard sentry, that was outside the captain's cabin where the keyboard was for all the keys, ammunition and whatever, that was always guarded by a Royal Marine. And then you have the Royal Marine part of ship, and they had to, when I say flats, I mean, I don't mean a flat like a bedroom and all that, I don't mean that. A flat is like a lobby, if you like, and the Royal Marines used to look after all the after flats. They were only the gangways. They all had to be washed every day and what have you, them. Then you'd have, Royal Marines did that. Then there was gun sweepers for the pom-poms, 4-inch, 6-inch turrets. And I got the job, funnily enough, of ex-turret sweeper.
Tell me about that.
Well, our job there was to keep the turret, the gun turret, clean and in pristine condition, if you like. It had to be done every day. The battles cleaned, all inside, oil, because you'd have oil all over the place, you know. They all had to be done. The decks had to be painted and what have you. Then you'd come down into the shell room. Then there was the cordite handling room further down. So from the turret right down to the cordite handling room, two of us used to look after. Wasn't my action station, but that was our job, cleaning that, keeping that clean. Quite a big job, really, for two. You had plenty of work to do. But it was a good one because, you know, if it got really hot, we'd only be in a pair of shorts, a pair of flip-flops, and that was it. In fact, I think I got a photograph taken, so I was sitting on top of the turret getting a bit of sun time. You
know? So there were sort of routine duties. There's after flats, centre duties, and you were on ex-turret.
I was on ex-turret, the routine. Yeah.
What about, can you describe the watch? I mean, did the Marines carry out the watch?
Oh, watch-keeping, yeah.
How did the watches work? Because people don't know.
Well, if you were actually watch keeping, you'd do afternoon first and morning, and dogs middle and forenoon. Now, the dogs were 4 in the afternoon till 8 at night. The middle was midnight till 4 in the morning, and the forenoon was 8 in the morning till 12 midday. The afternoon would be 12 till 4. The first watch would be 8 till 12, and the morning watch would be 4 till 8. And that was what name. But then they used to split the dog sometime. First dog and last dog. Well, the first dog was 4 till 6 and the last dog was 6 till 8. If you were duty watch, well, you were on duty 24 hours. Chief Port Watch were duty watch. They did the whole watch of the ship for 24 hours. Then you'd have your watches, then were split into two, first to port and second to port. First to starboard, second to starboard. Keyboard sentries used to obviously be watch-keeping because you had to have somebody there all the time. If somebody was in cells, you had to work up watch-keeping them then. If you duty watched, then you couldn't go out. You had to stay on board. What were the other watch-keeping jobs? Boats crews were watch-keeping. Were done that way, afternoon, first and morning, dogs, middle and forenoon. This watch-keeping came more into fore when we were off the coast of Korea.
Right. Now what about food? And I mean, was it...
Food, it was a communal kitchen they had on board, the big kitchen on board. And every day, two men off each mess were duty... Well, they used to call them cooks of the mess. They didn't cook anything, but they had to look after it for 24 hours. So it was your job to go down and get the food for the rest of the people on your mess. And you had to dish it out. Then you had to wash the tins, take them back to the galley and clear up the mess.
So it was general messing, they called it?
Yes, general
messing. Not canteen messing.
Not in canteen messing, general messing.
Or cafeteria.
No, general messing.
And so the cook... You take it in turns to the cooks of it.
Yeah.
Now, what was the food like compared, say, to army food or any other? You know,
the food on the Belfast was quite good indeed. I can't remember getting much of a bad meal on there. It was quite good.
What kind of food? Were there any special? Because there are some traditional naval dishes that are there.
Herrings in.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
I didn't mind.
The face. What's
I
herring?
Know. I didn't mind them. It was funny, though. They always used to do it, didn't they? If there was a bit of a swell on, you know, and the ship was just doing a bit like that, you go down, come back, guess what's on, lads? Herring's in, and you get some going, oh, I don't want any. All right, I'll have yours. And they were the big herrings. You know, they weren't the little ones. They were big ones. They were always warm in tomato sauce.
That's the in tomato sauce.
Herring's in, yeah. And
you didn't mind them, though?
I didn't mind them, and one of the breakfasts I loved was kidneys. Kidneys in gravy on toast. Nice. I used to like them. Other fellas didn't. Depends what the swell was like.
That had a nickname as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I can't think what they used to call that.
Never mind. Anything else? Favourite meals or ones you didn't like?
I wasn't that fussy with my food. I love the custard they used to make on board there. Because I used to go down and give us a mug and I used to drink a mug. Soup was always nice. The curry wasn't bad. And the dinners, if you had, you know, a roast dinner or whatever. Yeah, it wasn't bad, the food. But what, I must tell you this. My mate, Jack Jones, his birthday was the same day as mine. 23rd of October. Funny, his name was Jones, and funny this, you know, he had five brothers and two sisters, and I had five sisters and two brothers, and his birthday was the same day as mine, but I was 12 months older than them. He was the butcher on board, or one of the butchers, and the butcher's job on board a ship, a Royal Marine butcher, they're responsible for dishing the rum out, and they'd have the big rum barrel with the king, God bless him, or the queen, God bless her. We had both, because the king died while we were out, so we had both. And each one man off each mess was what they call the rum bosun, and he would take the fanny, and the fanny was an aluminium round tin with a handle on. They used to call it the rum fanny. Take it down. When they piped up, spirits, stand fast, the Holy Ghost. But they piped up, spirits, you got your can. You went down to the canteen flat, and the rum barrel would be there with the rum in it. There'd be the officer of the watch, master at arms, and the butcher. Master at arms would have the list, and you'd go up and shout, 38 mess, sir. tilt the rump fanny over the barrel. Now, bear in mind that Jack Jones is my mate. He's on the same mess as me. And whatever number he shouted, they had the appropriate measure for. That was 8 tots, and he used to go up to his elbows in the rump and pour in the measure and then in. What he used to do with ours, I don't know how he got away with it, because he just poured it in, and he'd always have a bit left over in this other, and he just come over and the two went in, back down the mess. And each bloke had his own glass, and they'd pick them up from anywhere. Some of the things I've seen on tot glasses. And but incidentally, when you get a tot of rum, it's one of rum and two of water you get. But it's about two-thirds of a half-pint glass that you get. So you dish it out, and I'd dish the 8 out, and there was always quite a bit left in the fanny. So that'd go to one side. And then you give the bloke his tot, and he used to give it straight back to you, you being the rum boat, and then say, sippers. So he took a sip of his, and each one did that. Then I used to put 2 dinners in the heater we had by the mess table. We had a steam heater. Then my mate would come down and we'd sit drinking the rum. Oh, it was very nice. Then we'd have our dinners. And, it was very good. It was a good job. And the other thing what we used to do, or Jack used to do, the officers on there never got any fillet steak because we had it. When the meat came on, if there was a fillet, and he used to put that to one side, slice it, put it in a big aluminium jug, and we used to take it down to the officers' galley. And this Chinese, one of the Chinese cooks we had, he'd do it for us. And we'd go back to the beef screen, and we'd have eggs and fillet steak. Now that's the gospel truth. That's the gospel truth. Yeah, the fillet steak and eggs. Lovely it was. So yeah, the food. It was good. Although, you know, we didn't know any different now then. But I think if I had to go through that now, it may be a bit tough.
Now, what about washing? Firstly,
I can't remember. Do you know,
can you tell us about the uniform first? So I'm not actually sure what you're wearing at Royal Marines on the Belfast.
Well, I'm trying to think now where we used to. I don't think I saw my greatcoat from the day I went on here till the day I come off. I think we kept 2 suits of blues. A navy blue battle dress and trousers. Your khaki battle dress went away. And I can't. Your blues were just hung up. They very little room. I don't know how the hell we managed, to be honest with you. There's very little, because she was on a wartime footing, don't forget. And she had a wartime complement then, the Belfast. Just like she would have during, 1939 onwards. So we had our uniforms hanging up there. And I can't. Oh, the lockers, you obviously had to fold shirts, socks, underwear, stuff like that, up into small to go into your locker. But the big things, like your greatcoat, and I never saw that. Things that you didn't need were put in what you called your sea bag. You had a big brown sea bag, and you had like an army kit bag. You had both. And the kit that wasn't required on board ship was put in your sea bag, and that sea bag was stored away.
Now, how did you laundry? I mean, how did you clean?
Chinese laundry on. Well, I used to wash my own underwear and that, but just get a bucket, Adobe bucket, and do a bit. Like underwear and socks, I'd do my own. But towels, shirts,
hammock
stuff went to the laundry. He had a Chinese laundry on board. He was absolutely wonderful, that Chinese. Two Chinese we had on board the Belfast. See him ironing shirts. Mouthful of water. Steam. But before they ironed, he used to put it in the mouth. And it, how the hell he done it, I don't know. Because it just used to come out like a mist of steam out of the mouths, the water. And then the officer's shirts, you know, really starched. They were brilliant on board the Belfast, the Chinese. Because you carried... we had our own cooks, but the officers had a couple of Chinese cooks. We had the Chinese laundry on board. So, you know, you paid them, like. But it was worth it. Because there was very few irons for us. You know, where would we get an iron from?
Now, what about your action? When you joined it, you'd be given a cruising station, action station?
Cruising station.
What was your cruising station?
Well, my cruising station was your action station, really, but it's just a... cruising stations were... I was trying to think of this the other day. There's one where we used to do 4 on and 8 off. Then there's another one where we used to do 4 on and 4 off. I'm just trying to think. See, action stations, everybody went.
Well, tell us about your action stations, perhaps, come back.
My action station was a single barrel pom-pom amidships on the... What side was it now, am I? Starboard side. Starboard side midships.
Now, tell us, what was the crew made up of on that?
There was myself. And one other marine, he was the loader. Because single-barreled pom-pom only took clips of 5. So you have to have somebody to load.
And it was a pom-pom, it wasn't an Ehrlichan or a boat.
No, it was a pom-pom.
And so you worked as a team, you and the loader?
Yeah. His sole job was to load, that's all. It was my job to aim, fire, and...
And which sight was it? Was it this gyroscopic one you'd been training on?
Gyro gun sight you'd had, yeah. They all had them. But then the 8-barrel... Oh, well, you had the gyro gun sight, and you had the big cartwheel sight as well. You know, just like a spider's web it was. And the 8-barrel pom-poms had the gyro gun sights. I think they were all gyro gun sights, but for, I don't know what the 4-inch wouldn't have. But the 8-barrel pom-poms had a gyro and an open sight.
Now, when you joined her, did you start on working up exercises? Either at Chatham or at Portland or wherever, or on the way out?
On the way out, working up trials, yeah.
And what were working up trials?
Well, they had the classic one. They used to have aircraft towing target. What do they call them? Drones, I think.
Drogues.
Because it said that one pilot, wireless down, said, I'm pulling this bloody thing, not pushing it. Well, anyway, little jokes. we had them, and then for the 4-inch, they used to bring a big target on a float being towed by a ship. For the 4-inch to practice. 6-inch, they couldn't really practice, could you, with a 6-inch? All they'd do is practice loading and one thing. They got all the bloody practice they needed later on. But the working up trials were pretty basic, really. I mean, all you could do was... For a moving target was have an aircraft towing a drove, or for the 4-inch, a ship pulling a target. And that would take that took place in the Med, off Gibraltar.
Now, we on the way out, you first you hadn't been on a ship before, really. Were you seasick at all?
No, never seasick. Didn't affect me at all.
So, anything you remember about joining the ship? Then you've joined the ship and you're off to the Mediterranean. Anything happened in those early days?
No, not really. That was our first Christmas, wasn't it? On the way out. Which was quite good. Had a good Christmas.
How do you celebrate Christmas on the ship, then?
Well, the sergeants come down and wait on you for dinner. They got the food for us and waited on us for that Christmas. Of course, the ship's dry apart from your tot of rum. And that's, you know, you just have what they used to call a sod's opera. You could always get somebody to get up on. We had a cinema on board. You'd always have somebody get up in the cinema on the stage there and have what we used to call a sod's opera and fellas telling a few jokes and fellas getting dressed up at different things and that's what they used to get up to. But as for anything else, it's like I said here, we worked up in the Med from November the 6th to the 16th. And then it was just a case of very little in between, because from the 16th working up, December the 4th, we were in Singapore.
Anything about the voyage to Singapore?
No, uneventful.
And you got there December?
Yeah, we were in Singapore December the 4th. We arrived in Hong Kong on...
Still 50. I'm just checking we've got
yeah,
the right
50,
date,
yeah. Arrived in Hong Kong the 14th of December.
And what did you think? Did you get ashore anywhere?
Yeah, we got ashore in Malta, Gibraltar.
Remember anything about them?
Oh! The only other interesting part going out was going through the Suez Canal. I don't know what you'd call them, came on board with all the wares. What do you call them? Selling purses and cigarette cases.
They actually came aboard?
Yeah, they actually let them on board, yeah. They stayed in on the waist. And then we just stopped and let them off.
But you don't remember being ashore particularly?
Going ashore in Singapore, yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, got drunk, didn't we? The Naffy in Singapore was right opposite the Raffles Hotel. You know the big hotel in Singapore? Well, the Naffy was right opposite there. It was just this nuts in them days. So I don't know what the people thought in the Raffles, you know. But we had a few good nights there, like we did anywhere else. But I preferred Hong Kong. Hong Kong seemed to be better to me.
Tell us about it. What was a visit ashore like then?
Well, there was two places you could go in Hong Kong. It was Kingsway, which was the posh side of Hong Kong. And there was, what's the name of the other part? It's on the tip of my tongue now. Kingsway. That's where all the big hotels and the cinemas were, the big cinemas there. What was the other end? Wan Chai. Wan Chai was very, very interesting. You could go there and go in and get measured. He'd measure for a shirt, and they used to make them a shark skin, like a material. They used to call it shark skin. They'd make a shirt in an hour. They'd measure you and they'd tell you to come back in an hour and there'd be your shirt. Because you could wear civvies ashore, you see. And all we used to wear was our KD trousers, which are like a beige colour, long trousers, and a civvy shirt. So, which was very good. But you could also go ashore there and order a suit. And a suit would be made in a couple of days for you in Hong Kong. And first experience of Chinese food then, which was all right. Hong Kong was a good run ashore. We used to go to pictures a lot. Have a few drinks. Oh, I had a trip up the Peak Railway. That's rather interesting. So that wasn't too bad.